Welcome to the Playmaker Podcast, a podcast for people who want to sell differently. Playmakers wage war against traditional sales and win. Remember, success is just one play away. Welcome, everybody, to the Playmaker Podcast. We've got a great speaker today. We got a great guest. We're going to be talking about B2B sales, one of the topics that's obviously near and dear to my heart, but we've brought on someone with a rich background in sales and marketing. His name is Victor Antonio. Victor, how the heck are you?
I'm doing good, Gabe. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, Victor and I connected. We had done that social selling. We had Sales for Life, who is, it's kind of a social selling company, and they invited myself to, on some sort of event, and I just got on there and was kind of not anti-social selling, but, you know, I just said my piece and got off. Anyways, Victor reached out, and we were laughing about it a little bit, and I saw Victor's rich background. I said, man, we ought to get on. He's got some great articles on LinkedIn. He's got some great things out there on the web, and so I wanted to bring him on. Right now, he's doing his own thing. He's the CEO and founder of the Sellinger Group, but I'd love, Victor, for you to take just a minute, maybe, and introduce yourself and this rich background, all things kind of sales and marketing.
Yeah, and by the way, you weren't mean or anything. You were just brutally honest, Gabe. You know, during good. That interview.
Good.
And I was just, as I was listening to it, I go, God, I like this guy. It was like you weren't being rude. I think you were just being direct to the point, cutting out the fat and the political correctness and going for it. And I go, man, I like this guy.
No, I appreciate it. Yeah, because that was funny. I remember the very beginning of that, they asked everybody for the definition of social. And I just with the straight face kind of said something. I can't remember exactly, but I remember I got quite the look from both the other participants. Like, who the hell is this guy? What does he think he's doing? So I'm glad it came off not too offensive. I mean, I was trying to be a little bit on the edge, but really I did. I mean, I've got some problems with social. I think there's some value there, but topic for probably another time. So give us your quick and dirty background.
Well, the reason I could appreciate you, I'm originally from Chicago, like literally Chicago, the inner city.
Wow.
And so, that's why I appreciate that directness. I don't like being handled, if you know what I mean. Mm. So that's why I really appreciated your words. So my background is, without going into too much lineage here, so my family's originally from Puerto Rico.
Oh, nice.
But I was born and raised in Chicago. And so we grew up on the northwest side near the Humboldt Park and Cabrini Green area. You know, if you know the area, you know, a lot of violence, drugs, gangs, a whole bit. Mom said, hey, go to school, get an education so you can get a good JOB. So I decided to get an electrical engineering degree. Why? Because they made more money. So that was my motivation, pure money. Then I got my MBA, went into corporate America, started out as an engineer. Within 3 years, I realized, what the hell did I do? And so I moved around from position to position, and then I got into sales. Started out as technical support. We were building fiber optic networks and wireless systems. I was actually designing them. And then they asked me, hey, would you like to come over in sales? We need somebody who has a technical background and can speak Spanish. And I'm like, well, do salespeople make more money? He said, yes. And I said, okay, cool. I started selling on technical support. And then one day I got offered an opportunity to start selling into Latin America. And, that led to another thing where I became director of sales for all of Latin America, then VP of sales for Latin America. And then I moved to another company where I became president of sales and marketing for a $420 million company global.
Wow.
And, back in May 9th, I think 2001, I just decided to kind of go on my own and, be a speaker and really begin to deliver content.
Wow.
And that's it in a nutshell, Gabe.
Wow. Interesting. That is quite the background. So you were a little money hungry, but after a while you went back to passion, huh? Something that you love and you love to do. And it sounds like you finally found your calling. So kudos. Normally when we bring people on, Victor, we usually kind of put them on the spot and say, hey, outside of work, is there something that's a little more personal to you? An embarrassing moment, something unique about yourself, a passion or hobby?
I'm kind of a boring guy. So I read a lot. I read and walk a lot, believe it or not. I mean, that's as exciting as I get.
Now, are you a real reader or are you a listener?
I don't do any No, I'm a reader, actually. Like, I love books. You know, I got, you know, which I try to do maybe, you know, one or two books a week easy.
Oh, wow. Wow.
And I love reading. I'm that guy that loves quiet.
Yeah.
You know, when I get home, it's funny because when I'm out there, as I say, in the public space, I'm the most extroverted person you'll meet. I'll talk to anybody at a doorknob, right? Yeah. When I get home, I just really just want to unplug from the world. So I do have a vice, though. I love one black and white movies, like old vintage black and white movies, like 30s, 40s, 50s. Right? And I have this addiction. I have this addiction for samurai movies.
Samurai movies.
Literally an addiction. I got a DVD. Yeah, the old samurai movies. Directors like Akira Kurosawa. I mean, I just love those old Japanese samurai movies. Don't ask me why. I just do. I think there's something about the. I think the code of honor. A true samurai movie, and I don't mean to rabbit hole, but I'll just say this. A true samurai movie is never about the fight itself. The fight can last maybe like, you know, 30 seconds. It's the code of honor around, you know, the samurai, you know, culture that I've always admired.
Interesting, yeah.
And I mean, the rituals and the, fascinating.
Fascinating. Yeah, I can't argue. You got something there. Certainly with some of the karate, the jujitsu, the samurai, it fits into that a little bit. There is something about kind of the way those guys do things and the honor and the code that they run. I get you where you're going with that. I got to ask then, on the book side, what's kind of the latest recommendation on books? Something you say, man, that's a must have for, are you more into fiction? Yeah. Are you more into the sales world? Where do you go with those?
No. All like business books. I'm going to reach over here. I got to walk over. I went back and I plucked this book out of, you know, I'd seen this book and you'll probably know what I'm talking about. And I had not read this book. And I said, you know, I really got to read this book. And I think it came out in 2006. It's How to Sell at Margins Higher Than Your Competitors. It's by Steinmetz and Brooks. And that's Bill Brooks, who passed away. Maybe rest in peace. But this, have you read this book, by the way?
No, I've not heard of it. Not heard of it. I'm writing it down right now.
Oh, it's How to Sell at Margins Higher Than Your Competitors. And it was written in 2006. And I remember seeing this book all the time. So I got to read that book. So I finally started reading it. And what a gold mine.
Really?
Okay. What a gold mine. You know how you go? I always do the 100 page test. Yeah. And that is that if it doesn't capture me in the first 100 pages, I just donate it to Goodwill. And I mean that, by the way. Yeah, I have the smallest book collection you'll ever see, by the way. You know how speakers always or trainers always show you their huge library?
Yeah.
Show you the smallest library.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm looking
because
at it right now.
The book is not good enough. That doesn't have first. Yeah, it's a great book. I mean, some of the concepts, it's meat. You know what I mean?
I love it. I love it.
You've read sales books where you got to go, and there's nothing there. So yeah, it's a great book.
Yeah. And oftentimes to your point, there's sometimes, I guess using your word milk and me, I mean, a little more milk in the sense that, yeah, you can get through it and it's kind of the usual, but I'll check it out. I'm looking at it now. Well, let's get into the topic at hand, Victor. So you and I were talking pre-show about this concept of B2B sales and the evolution of it and it's changing. You mind taking a minute and kind of framing the conversation around how has B2B sales started to change? What are some of the major points that have been more interesting to you?
I think if you don't mind me starting here, is that, you know, for those who don't know the difference between B2B, B2C, business to consumer, more traditional, short sales cycle, where B2B is obviously, you know, longer sales cycles, more people involved in making a business decision. And that's the world I came from. And so I'm often miffed when I hear, you know, the phrase that ABC always be closing, because the reality is, you know, and you know this already, Gabe, the buyer has changed. They're more informed, you know, whether you believe the CEB that they're 57% into the buying cycle or the other study that said they're 70% of the buying cycle, who knows, right? You know, Google tell you, consumers will read 10 sources of information before contacting a buyer, blah, blah, on and on and on, right?
Right.
At the end of the day, I still believe is, you know, how do we segment the market? How do you target your clients and how do you go after them? And I think what's happening is that it's becoming more of a value play. I think the sales actually becoming more relevant than ever. And I say this because product differentiation is so difficult today. You know, the equality of quality, right? It's my good phrase. Everything is almost the same that the customer can't differentiate. And I think an interesting analysis is that, yeah, consumers have more information. Yeah, they're further into the buying cycle. To me, that's good news, because the more information they have, the more confused they are, if that makes any sense.
That's awesome. That's a great spin on it. Normally people, that's kind of an excuse to get rid of salespeople, but you're flipping that on its head.
No, I mean, there was a study. I don't know who did this study. You probably heard it. It was a jam display. You know, they sold jelly jams.
Yeah.
And they set up a table with 6 flavors. And then they set up another table with 24 flavors, right?
Yes.
And the question is, obviously, which one would sell more? Well, it turns out that the one with 24 flavors only sold 3%, but the one with 6 flavors, less options, sold 30%.
Yeah.
It's like a 10-to-1.
Yeah.
And so that to me tells me that when there's too many options on the table, you know, the buyer's going to go, I'm not sure. Let me think about it. In other words, their level of certainty drops, because the more they search, the more they look, the more they add to their, you know, product profile, the more confused they get.
Mm.
And so that's why everybody else is like, this is not good for salespeople. I'm like, this is great for salespeople, because here's where you're going to come in and position the true value of what you have to offer.
Interesting.
Does that make sense?
No, it does. Let me ask a follow-up on it, because there's two things that you kind of brought up. So one is around education, and the other is kind of around decision-making. I remember that study, Victor. Actually, I feel like it came from that book by Daniel Pink on motivation, maybe. Ah, it's in one of those books I read, but I definitely remember the study.
No. It's not Daniel Pink, and I got his name. It's right there. As we keep talking, I'll remember.
Ah, yeah, if you remember it, because now that is killing me. But
it was one of those books. It's one of those books like Sway or Those Aren't It. That study's been, again, mentioned in many books.
It definitely has.
And
but
if I go to my bookshelf, I can probably find it.
Yeah, I do remember it. But let me ask you this. So when it comes to the educational piece, I mean, that's an interesting point, right? You know, a lot of people say, hey, we've got so much content out there that people are 100% down the buying pipeline, so they maybe don't need a sales rep, et cetera. But you're kind of saying, hey, look, because there's so much information out there, doesn't necessarily mean that they've got the right information or they are ready to do the right thing. This is actually for you as a sales rep. It's a chance for you to be able to come in and actually educate them and point them in the right direction, or really hone them in the right place, even though they may have read or digested a lot of content. Am I understanding that right?
Absolutely. I mean, let's kind of slice it a little bit. If it's a commodity sale, almost transactional, then you know what? We need to get rid of the salesperson. So if you're selling a commodity product, I don't know, like iPhone cases, right? I don't need you. I can figure this out, and I'm willing to roll the dice because the price is so low,
right,
that if it doesn't work, I can just toss it, right? But in a complex sale where the investment and the risk is higher, and now I got to justify it to my higher ups, then you know what? I need help making this decision.
Yeah, that's
a great point. Looking for a salesperson that has that business acumen, but also has that technical knowledge, right? Understands the trends in the industry, knows where the market's going, and can put it in. I get it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's what today's buyers want. And so I see people retreating towards, oh my God, they have a patient. Why even call on them? I'm like, you idiot. You idiot. Now's the time. This is your moment as a salesperson to shine in a complex sale.
Yeah, you know, it's funny because I think people more so than ever, I'll often use the analogy, you know, the weight scale doesn't really help you lose weight. Oftentimes these people are researching these products and, you know, whether it's a CRM or a ERP system or whatever the tool may be, that's typically not the answer. You know, it's always people and processes and systems together. And so I'm with you. That's a real interesting turn on it. If you can get them in there and say, hey, you get the Fat Camp program with that tool, you know, you get the value, the consulting that I can provide as an expert, you're in a whole different spot. The problem with that, Victor, is I don't know if sales reps have made that change. I think they're still selling the weight scale. I think they're, to your point, saying, well, we've already done research on the tool. I don't know if I can add that much value. What's holding sales reps back from getting to that place of, hey, I can actually help drive or create this plan transformational plan that utilizes my tool but can help you become a superhero to you and your boss. Why don't sales reps get there? What's holding them back?
Yeah, I guess my perspective is that, you know, salespeople who use the excuse that people have too much information, therefore they know what they want, you know, are either lazy or scared. Take your pick, right?
Yeah.
Too lazy to know any better and actually go find out, or too scared to approach customers and challenge them, which ties back to the book, you know, the Challenger Sale. You know, in my opinion, is a book in the milestone of sales books.
It is.
Before that, the marker was spin selling.
That's right.
Because that's what Neil Rackham did that study with, I don't know, like 10,000 sales reps. And he was the one that really talked about, situation, you know, understand about the implication and the impact, you know, what's the need payoff if they solve the problem. So we were oriented towards that. And I think the next book that came after that, or around that time, was, remember Mac Hannon's book, Consultative Selling?
Yep.
And that, to me, if you were to say what is the most important book in selling, still, Mac Hannon's book, if you go back and really read it, everybody else copies them. Neil Rackham copies it. The Selinger people, Challenger sales people copy them. All that stuff that Mac Hannon said, you know, everybody utilizes. Huh. And what he said, and I still remember this, you got to find the profit points. Consultative selling is about obviously positioning yourself as a trusted advisor, blah, blah, right? But how do you basically, and the keyword here is, how do you quantify the value?
Yeah.
And he said, if you can't quantify value, they can't justify a decision. And I've loved that phrase. You know what I mean? I mean, really think about that.
Yeah, that's powerful. Dave.
If you can't quantify the value after talking to a customer, you know, he can't justify it to himself or his upper management. And so what I often hear salespeople about this in some of my videos is that they're always about qualitative, not quantitative. By qualitative, they'll say something like, you know, my system's fast. How much faster? Real fast, Victor. And it's better. How much better? Real good, Victor. You know what I mean? And it'll go, you know, longer. How much longer? Real long. You know?
real good, better. Real long, good.
Yeah. Real good. Yes, real good, Victor. You know, it's much better than your competitors. Well, how much better? Much, much better. Like, if much, much, much was a quantitative phrase. And so I always say that, and I talk about this a lot, that in the B2B space, Gabe, I like to simplify my life. And I say, if I can teach you three things, if I can show you how my product or service can help you increase revenue, reduce costs, or expand your market share, or all three, if I can quantify those numbers, then price, you know, moves into the background.
That's right.
And so as I'm reading this book also, you know, this book that I just mentioned, How to Sell at Margins Higher Than Your Competitors, pretty much they say the same thing.
Yeah.
But they really talk about the impact of, one of the things, let me just tangent here a bit. One of the things I love in the book, and I would love for you to look at it and then tell me what you think, Gabe, is that they talk about that if you give, on average, a 10% discount on products that have a 35%, you almost have to sell twice as much to achieve the same profitability. I mean, just let that sink in there for a while. 10%, a 35% margin product, you almost have to sell twice as much just to be as profitable. Now, the salesperson doesn't give a rip, right? Because they're focused on hitting volume, hitting sales. But sometimes I shouldn't say that. Most of them don't give a rip, right? Because they're not thinking about the company's profitability. But I think it's important to look at it from that standpoint, that discounting, as I would say, is not selling, it's gifting, you know, and you're gifting value. And that is something I learned from Mac Hannon, right?
Yeah.
When you discount, you gift away value.
Yeah.
Because you're too lazy to quantify it.
Yeah, my goodness. Yeah. And that's always the first string we want to pull, right? You obviously want to drop the price. You know, I had one rep tell me, kind of thinking of that Challenger model, you know, he said, truthfully, I don't even like to do a needs audit or a needs analysis or ask them questions anymore. He's like, I just like to come into their business, figure out where they should go, and then basically kind of write the plan for them. You know, don't waste any time running through the, certainly there's still a discovery process, but I love this, you know, real focus on, let's just get to this value concept rather than, you know, ask them what their dream and vision is. Let's just get in, get done, get dirty, see if we can't get to kind of where we think we can make the biggest push or pull. So let me push this on you. You mentioned that study, you know, with the different choices. And I think that dovetails into this, but is you're a sales rep? I mean, sometimes that is a problem when we go, you know, we become a la carte. We say, hey, you can get this, 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 and this, and then you can add the cherry and the sprinkles, and you know, you can get it with nuts, etc. You know, you alluded to kind of that 10 decisions or 24 decisions, etc. When you're selling, I mean, is there a way you believe that you can kind of simplify that and get to a? Do you go with a good, better, best model? Do you just tell the customer, this is what you should do, here's the option? Do you give them 10 choices? Have you found this, that, you know, reps can get stuck in the, hey, here's so many choices that, again, we didn't tell them what to do. We kind of asked them and said, hey, here's the variety. Where do you want to go?
I'm from the school of risk aversion, and I learned something many years ago. And the guy that really opened my eyes to how the brain works, it was, you know, obviously, Dr. Robert Cialdini with his book Influence, right? Mm. And, you know, like Daniel Kahneman, who wrote, I Think Fast, when he talked about System 1 and System 2.
Yeah, how Thinking the brain Fast works. And Slow. I remember
and
that
one. And they convinced me. That one. So when I always look at, you know, Cialdini and especially Daniel Kahneman, who was a precursor to Cialdini.
Yep.
If you study them, you know, studies upon studies have shown that three options is always the best. But they explained it, though, in a way that I'll just try to simplify. Your brain is a risk mitigating machine. Okay. And so I'm going to answer your question, go roundabout a little bit. It's a risk mitigating machine, which means when you give it two options and it's unsure, it will always mitigate its risk by going for the one that's a little cheaper. So in other words, if you're looking at buying a computer, for example, and you're not sure how much power you need, how much processing time, you know, all that, you know, GPU needs, whatever it may be, you say, you know what, let me just go with the cheaper one because I don't know. So the brain likes to mitigate risk. Mm. But then they did a study with, you know, bread makers. And by simply adding a third, the best option, right? What happens is that the whole, sales shifted upwards. In other words, most people bought the one in the middle. This is what was interesting. It had like a 40-60% shift towards buying the second option, the middle option.
Right.
And what they figured out is, again, the brain is a risk mitigating machine. It'll look at the three options, says, "Ooh, that's too much. Oh, that's not enough. Let me go with the safest one. That's one in the middle." And I've always loved that because I always present. I am like the three option guy every time. I've simplified my life that way. And by the way, don't believe me. Go to Starbucks. How many options do you get? You know. You get the venti, grande, and the other one, the tall.
Yeah,
right?
That's
you go
right.
to McDonald's. That's with three right. options because they know how you think, right? They got it. You look at the three burgers and you go, ooh, too big. Ooh, too small. I might still be hungry. Let me go, right? Or you try to just not feel guilty. So you go with the medium always because, just give me some medium fries.
Right.
And so when I'm always presenting options, I always present three options. And obviously, you know, the first one's fully loaded. By the way, different studies show different numbers, but they point towards one direction is that when you offer three on average, 20% will always migrate to the best option. These are people who just want the best. It's not about price. They want the best.
Yeah.
So there's another way of shifting. So, I mean, if you run the numbers, if you do a two option versus three, you'll see the difference. One of my biggest customers is Orkin, the Rollins Corporation. Before I started working with them like 5 or 6 years ago, they only offered two options. Now they offer three options, a triple guarantee. And the president of sales will tell you, he said that changed the game. I mean, literally that simple change changed the game in their revenue model.
Wow.
By just adding three options. So that's how I would approach it. So three options is great.
So really that's the place you go is kind of keep it simplified, but keep it in those options where you can have a middle, because that's typically where the psychological brain wants to go to be a little bit safer. Interesting, Victor. Well, a lot of good information in this world of kind of complex and B2B sales. As we wrap up here, any kind of closing remarks or last thoughts for the audience?
No, just make sure your sales is simple. The process, I think the simplest sales process I figured out in my head is just three steps. The empathy piece, empathize with where they're at. I mean, really, you know, feel their pain. The second piece you mentioned, we talked about, is the education piece. That's where I think the best salespeople differentiate themselves. And then the last part is the empower piece, guide them towards a decision. That could be like the three option piece, right? By presenting them three options, you're guiding them. Say, these are the best three right here. Why don't you go ahead and pick? So if you know how to empathize with your customer, educate them in a way they go, huh, this guy knows what he's talking about, and then empower them to make that decision by presenting the right options, I think that, to me, is the simplest sales model.
I love it. I love it. Well, Victor, really appreciate it. Great closing remarks. If someone wants to get a hold of you or learn a little bit more about what you do, what's the best way for them to do that?
VictorAntonio.com. And if I may add, we just launched our online platform. It's called the Sales Mastery Academy. More information can be found at VictorAntonio.com. And it's, you know, right now it's priced at a great deal. Access to all my different programs. I think I have 24 courses with over like 300 modules.
Wow.
In the program. And it starts like at $99. Wow. So it's not expensive at all.
Got it. Awesome. Well, sounds like some great content. Sounds like you're well-read and some information to take it. So again, Victor, appreciate the time. For the audience, remember, success is just one play away.